J1, number 12A.
We see then that the world today obeys those laws of mind, spirit, and soul. And the world obeys more or less this journey from sense to soul, which is then a journey from dropping off our limited beliefs in order that our true identity can appear. So let's just go on and see what this particular symbol from sense to soul means as it defines our true identity. So let's go on and see what the teachings of Christian Science are concerning our true identity and get in then to this question of identity. Now to go on, we see, or in a moment here, always to recapitulate, to bring us into the realm of identity, we have to always go back then and see what mind says, what spirit says, and then we can then see what soul says. Mind teaches then as a symbol that there is only one mind, and that mind creates divine ideas. Now, spirit as a symbol teaches that ideas are diversified. Therefore, ideas never repeat themselves, but are always such that ideas must take on new forms. Therefore, ideas always exist in a variety of forms. There is diversification to ideas. Spirit teaches then that ideas are classified. This means that all diverse ideas are classified, all ideas, all the variety of ideas are arranged in their proper categories. And we see that ideas are individualized. This means that all diverse ideas which are arranged in their proper categories are distinct and individual. That diverse ideas are not vague in any way or indefinable. That diverse ideas are classified and they're distinct and individual. Therefore, we can say that ideas are unique. Now, soul as a symbol teaches then, because each diverse idea is individual and unique, then each idea has its definite identity. Then it says that each idea then has definite characteristics. And in Science and Health, we read, the divine mind maintains all identities, from a blade of grass to a star, as distinct and eternal. Now, soul then says, therefore, that every idea has its definite identity. So we can see, therefore, that a blade of grass cannot be confused with a star. And we can see then, if each identity has its distinct characteristics, then we can say that each identity has its distinct name. Each identity is clearly distinguishable from every other idea. Now we come to the meaning of identity, and we see in the dictionary it means this. And I would like to read about four different statements here from the American Heritage Dictionary on identity, because I'll refer back to them. Now, identity comes from the Latin root word meaning the same. And first, identity means the collective aspect of the set of characteristics by which a thing is definitively recognizable or known. It means a quality or condition of being exactly the same as something else. It means a quality or condition of being or remaining the same. It means a personality of an individual regarded as a persisting entity. Now, so far we have seen that soul as a symbol is teaching this particular definition of identity. Soul as a symbol teaches that each identity is definitively recognizable. and that each identity has definite, unique characteristics which distinguish it then from every other idea. And as we have seen, each of these distinct ideas are unique and they do not stand alone, because Spirit has taught and shown that each idea operates on an infinite calculus, that each idea must identify and reflect with every other idea, and no idea stands alone, and that each idea therefore is in an infinite calculus. And this is the whole question of cybernetics today. Cybernetics is talking about an infinite calculus of ideas, and it talks about a whole system of ideas which are in reflection. And when one reads the various literature coming out on cybernetic systems, they always talk about how one part of that system cannot break down, because that part is very unique and it's needed in the system and it cannot break down. And this is true in the terms of human beings, that we all interrelate with every other idea, and we must fulfill our unique role. If we cop out, so to speak, or we go away from what our unique role is in being, then the system in the organization which we're a part of breaks down. We must maintain our identity, our unique identity in the system, and reflect every other idea in a harmonious way. And this means then, Soul teaches, that if each idea has its distinct characteristic, then we know that no idea can compete, and we should drop off that limited sense of competition. Really, one is competing with oneself, so to speak. One is fulfilling one's own unique mission, and you compete with yourself in order to fulfill it as best as possible. But yet we really are not competing with the next fellow. He is needed in the system in order to accomplish what is necessary. So we compete, so to speak, with ourselves in order to say, okay, now get along and fulfill your role as best as you can. So we do not live in a people universe, and we are not competing with people. We're competing more or less with our own selves and our own role in life, and making sure we're just in there accomplishing it. Now, in reality, then, we see that it's an infinite calculus of unique ideas which then reflect every other idea. Now let us look closely then at the other part of the definition on identity. Now this part of the definition states, identity is meaning the quality or condition of being exactly the same as something else. Now, identity has meant, as we've seen, that identity means that each identity has its distinct characteristics. It's definitively recognizable. Now, here in the definition of identity, we come to the meaning of the quality or condition of being exactly the same. Now, what does that mean? Why does it say in identity that there is the quality or condition of being exactly the same as something else? Well, what are we the same as, we can say? What does that mean that we're the same as something else? Now, identity then speaks of sameness. So let us ask ourselves, well, what are we the same as? What are we similar to? What does this really mean? Now, in a very simple way to begin with, we know that all ideas are the same or coincide with the divine nature. Therefore, all ideas are, we can say, the same as the divine nature. Now, this has bigger implications than just saying all ideas are the same as the divine nature, because it states our true identity of who we are. Now, again, we go back to mind. We must go back to pick up the flow. We see that there is only one mind, and this mind is the all in all. Therefore, we all have that one mind. We are all of that one mind. We must claim this of our identity, that there is only one mind, and that's our mind. We do not have an isolated mind of our own, we can say, but there is just one mind, and that divine mind is our very own mind. Now, in a unique way, we can say that this one mind that each one of us has is that one mind appearing in an individual, unique way, yet still remaining the one mind. We all are of that one mind, but it's that one mind appearing in an individual way, yet still remaining that one mind. So we claim that we are that one mind. And we see then that this one mind is always active, mind is always active, mind is always creating ideas. And we have seen then that these ideas that mind creates are always diversified ideas, they're always classified ideas, and they're always unique and individual ideas. Now, we have, in the time before, taken this idea of man, and it's good to take and look at this idea of man because it helps us see identity. We see then that mind forms more or less what we call this idea man. And as we look out and view the image, we see this idea man standing in its generic term. So in a very simple way, now this is just symbols. This isn't actually talking about reality. We want to use this just as a symbol, where we say then that we look out and see this one idea man, which we call man. And we say, okay, now that idea man is diversified. That means that idea man appears in many forms. And as we've seen, that idea man is classified. That idea man not only appears in many forms, but that idea man is classified into the categories we saw, like of artist, musician, lawyer, doctor, whatever. And we see then for that these, it's not only classified, but this idea man is unique and in individual. It appears in an individual, unique way. So Spirit goes on to teach then that this idea man does not stand alone, as we've seen, but that each man must reflect every other man. And so all men reflect every other man in an infinite way. So this is just a way of showing mind and spirit, that there's the idea man, and this idea man appears in many forms. It's classified and it's individualized. And soul then just comes in as a super symbol and always says, well, that's your true identity. What mind says and what spirit says about man, that's your true identity. So coming back, soul then will just say what mind says and what spirit says is the truth about the one identity. There is just one identity. So because there is one mind and one spirit, there isn't many minds and many spirits, there has to be one identity. So again, I think if we just do this while we're here in the room, I kind of like us just to look around the room again and just get the feeling of what identity may be. And let's take this term of thought of mind. Let's just take the idea then of mind, that we all have one mind. And let's just kind of see what it means just by looking around again in the room. Now, we say then that there is only one mind, and that we all in this particular room are of that one mind. Now, what does this mean? As we look around the room, we can see then that this one mind, so to speak, it's hard often to feel that there isn't just one mind, because as we look around the room, we tend to see that there are, this one mind is appearing in many different forms. So we must always hold on to the fact that there's only one mind, but because this one mind always appears in different forms, we think that there are minds many. You see, we can say to ourselves, well, in this room, we see that these forms, this one mind appears in different forms. It appears as Jack, it appears as Johnny, it appears as Gary or Ann or Pam. You see, we can say that this one mind is appearing in different forms, but we can very easily say, well, Jack has a mind of his own, or Johnny has a mind of his own, or Pam has a mind of her own. But we have to see, no, what it's saying in the room as we're looking around is that there's only one mind, but that this one mind is appearing in different, unique ways. It's appearing in many forms. It's the one mind appearing in many forms, you see. So this one mind not only appears in many unique forms, you see, but this one mind is also classified and individualized. Therefore, this one mind appears in many forms as Jack, let's say, but it's also classified and individualized. Jack is classified, you could say, as a artist. But he's not only just in the broad category of artist, he's an individual, unique artist. He himself fulfills a unique role within the field of art. Or we can say then that we can take Johnny, we can say that he is a musician. He is classified within the field of music. What we see then, you see, it's a one mind appearing in many forms, but that those many forms are diversified, classified, and individualized, you see, in order to fulfill its self, you see, and that this, because ideas never repeat themselves. So we can see then that in this room then is the one mind appearing in many different forms. It's appearing in different classifications and in different, in individual different ways. And soul comes in and says, all right, now, all these many diverse forms or ideas we have in the room are the one, are still remaining the one mind. And that's the accent that soul has on it, is as its oneness. And if I can just say it again, you see, as we look in the room, we see that there are many forms, and these forms are diversified, classified, and individualized, yet they still remain the one mind, and this is what we have to see. Even though we appear as Jack and Johnny and Ann and Gary and Mike or whoever, we say, all right, this is still the one mind appearing in different forms, appearing in individual, unique ways, never repeating itself. Therefore, it appears in unique ways, yet it always remains the one mind. And we never drop into the sense that there are minds many, you see. Now, that is our true identity. That, and soul says, and that's your identity. And if we can always maintain that monistic reasoning, so to speak, that reasoning which always reasons in a one-valued logic, that it's the one mind as we go forth in the world, always appearing in, because mind can never repeat itself. It's a law, you see, that mind never repeats itself. It's a law as symbolized by spirit that it must appear in diverse forms. It must be classified. It must be individualized. Therefore, mind must always repeat itself new and new. So as we go into the world, we always see new ideas, but it's always the one mind appearing. That, soul says, is your true identity. This is why in Bible history, Moses could claim his true identity when he said, I am that I am. Moses saw that he was that one mind, infinitely individualized, yet still remaining that one mind. I am that I am. Because there are many people in the room who look like they have many minds, doesn't take away from the fact that there's one mind. You see, the truth is that there's one mind infinitely individualizing itself, but still remaining the one mind, you see. This is such a big lesson that one must see and always hold to, because it's very easy to drop into a dualistic reasoning. And this is why Moses could say, I am that I am. I am that one mind, infinitely individualized, yet still remaining that one mind. And this is how Jesus knew his identity when he said, I and my Father are one. I and the parent mind are one. Jesus knew that he was that one mind, infinitely individualized, yet still remaining the one mind. Now, this is what we must see very clearly. It's the truth about our identity. It's a truth about that big identity. There is only one mind. There can only be one identity. But it appears in many forms, in infinitely unique ways, yet it still remains that one identity. And that's one of the biggest teachings, actually, in the science of Christian Science. If we can grasp that, we really grasp onto reality. Now, in just saying it slowly so you can catch our symbols of mind, spirit, soul, I said it quickly, and just to catch those symbols again, to reason. When we can say that each one of us is the one mind. We're talking about the symbol mind. Mind is saying this. The symbol mind says, each one of us is the one mind. The symbol spirit says, and that one mind is always appearing in a unique and individual way. And the symbol soul says, yet still remaining the one mind. So that's the flow from mind to spirit to soul. When I say each one of us is the one mind, appearing in a unique individual way, spirit, yet still remaining the one mind, soul. You see, that's how we use those super symbols, mind, spirit, and soul, to state that fact in being. Now, soul goes on and teaches, claim it. Claim that as your true identity. You see, it's so easy to say that there is only the one mind, infinitely individualized, yet still remaining the one mind, and not claim it. We can just not really claim it as our true identity. Soul, as a super symbol, is teaching, now you claim that as your true identity. We must claim that fact as our selfhood and the bigness of ourself. That I am that I am. Claim it. Claim I am the one mind, infinitely individualized, yet still remaining the one mind. There's power in that, and there's bigness in that. And this is what soul says, claim your true identity. And if we can go away this evening with one thing in mind, soul, about soul, it says, claim your identity. Claim the bigness of your identity. Claim that you are that I am. So as we walk away this evening, we can very well take with us that I am that I am and claim it, you see. We can go on with identity and see another profound thing about the nature of identity. Now, the philosopher Schilling made a statement about true identity when he said, reality at its deepest level at which subject and object are one. Now, what does this mean, that reality at its deepest level at which subjective and objective are one? What does this mean? Now, we have the one mind. All right, now, the one mind, our mind, is subject. That's the subjective viewpoint. The one mind, our mind, is a subjective viewpoint. That one mind forms the image. The image is the objective viewpoint. The one mind, subjective, forms the objective image, you see. The one mind, subject, forms the objective image. And Schilling says that the subject and object are one. Therefore, mind, which forms that image, that mind and that image are one and the same thing. That mind and its image are one. They are not separated. This is how this is the fallacy then to the dualistic reasoning, that mind and matter exist, and that matter exists per se independent of the human mind. The truth is that subject and object are one. That is the truth. Therefore, this is monistic reasoning. Therefore, the one mind and its image are one. The one mind and its idea are one. So, again, we can see then, using our symbols, just to go back in a drilling way, we can say mind as a symbol then, the symbol mind in our teaching. Mind explains the subject, right? When we study the synonymous term mind, we are studying the subject. Mind as a symbol explains the divine mind and explains all the ideas which characterize that mind. So we're studying the subject when we study mind. When we study soul, a spirit, excuse me, as a symbol, then we're studying the object. When we study spirit, we're studying in detail the reality about the object or the image or the reflection and all the ideas that characterize that image or reflection. So when we study mind, we study the subject. When we study spirit, we study the object. When we study soul, we study that subject and object are one, and that is your true identity. Again, then, soul teaches identity and that subject and object is one. Soul always teaches identity and always then teaches claim that true as your truth about your true identity. So, again, as we leave tonight then, the only thing we can say about, right at the moment, about this particular synonymous term, soul, is that it says, again and again and again, claim that the divine mind is your very own mind. Claim all the ideas that characterize mind. Claim that I am the idea intelligence. I am the idea power. I am the idea law. Claim it. Claim all the ideas that characterize spirit. I am the idea understanding. I am the idea purity. I am the idea strength. Soul says, claim all those ideas that characterize mind. Claim all those ideas that characterize spirit. Claim all those ideas as your own true identity. Then as we go on to study principle, we then can very easily see that if we claim mind, spirit, and soul as our true identity, then we can very easily say, then I have that identical identity with principle itself. At that point, we can say, I have that very identical identity with principle itself, and that's the whole tone of the Christ idea. Soul presents our true identity and brings and ushers in the Christ idea. The whole Christ idea is just that we have that identical identity with principle itself. And this is how they reasoned Jesus, who was a man, like every other man, could claim the Christ. He could call himself Christ Jesus because he said, I and my Father are one. He claimed his identity. He claimed the Christ. He claimed his identity that I and my Father are one and the Christ is that. That identity is identical with principle. So when we therefore claim mind, claim spirit, claim soul as our identity, we can then call ourselves Christ. I could say I'm Christ Joel, Christ Barbara. However, you see, because Christ is just a state of consciousness, of being identical with principle. It's a state of consciousness, of having that identical identity with principle and claiming it.